Good morning, everybody. Welcome into Morning Invest on this December 16th. It is Thursday. It's the day of our little girl's Christmas concert.
It's also my mother's birthday. Happy birthday.
Mama. Happy birthday, Wanda. Wanda's watching right now. She's in the chat.
Happy birthday, Wanda.
Happy birthday, Wanda. Good morning. Happy birthday, everyone. Coming up on today's show, we're going to analyze what Fed Chair Jerome Powell laid out after the big Fed Chair meeting yesterday. Raising interest rates, slashing stimulus, what this all means for the economy, and now other banks around the world are following suit. So this has broad implications, which we will get into this morning.
And how many of you like cooking and heating your house with gas? You might want to put that hand down because there's new research out about how dangerous that is. And now the city of New York has banned it in all new construction projects.
And is math, yes, mathematics, is math racist? Well, USA Today seems to think that math, the actual, you know, addition, subtraction, fractions, is racist. We'll tell you what they mean by this, and we'll have a good discussion about mathematics being racist this morning. Hey, I'm not racist, but math is racist. That's on the show today. Let's get uncomfortable, because the only way you grow in life is when you're uncomfortable. Morning Invest starts right now. Angel Baby Cards in our chat says, yes, math is racist, just like Jeopardy. Jeopardy's racist, too.
Okay,
Wait till the story.
All right.
Wait till the story.
I don't think we should condescend before we tell the story is what I'm going to say.
I'm not condescending Jeopardy.
Okay.
I loved Alex Trebek.
Okay. All right. But first,
I'm still processing that you said cook and eat your house with gas.
Cook and heat. Heat. What did I? Okay. Maybe I did say that. I'm sorry.
It sounded like you said cook and eat your house.
Why are you racist against heating oil?
I mean, I am prejudiced against one type of energy over another. We're going to discuss that later. First, we're going to tell you why the markets went green after Fed Chief Jerome Powell announced that he is going to taper off quantitative easing in the new year. Also, he will raise interest rates in the new year. Now, this is something they have been not wanting to do. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Clayton wants to read the news.
Yeah. We're going to get to the news. You want to do that first?
I kind of did it.
No.
I did
that.
All
right. Let's get to the news.
I'll come back around.
We're going to go to your news headlines here. We're going to get to your news headlines first, and then we'll get to all of these stories here on the rundown.
I'm just going to hold my horses over here.
Have you had like way too much coffee this morning?
No.
All right. All right. Let's jump into your news, shall we? Because let's start with the stimulus update. Will we see any kind of economic stimulus before the end of the year? The answer is cloudy at best. I was looking at my Magic 8 Ball this morning. Last night, Democrats ran into a Joe Manchin size wall as they tried to pass a $2 trillion spending plan. Talks appeared to collapse last night between President Biden and Senator Manchin over the size and the scope of the economic package. Of course, he has said that he would never support anything that's this large. Well, now it's been whittled down and whittled down and whittled down. Biden is trying to keep the size of the plan intact, and Manchin is trying to cut. And just a reminder, by the way, if you need some context here, this guy, Joe Manchin, this guy here, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who cares about the people, had no problem last week passing a $768 billion defense budget last week. And the senators added an additional $20 billion more than they even requested. But let's not get sidetracked here. The biggest issue right now is what Bernie Sanders wants. Bernie Sanders wants this $3,600 per child tax credit, the $3,600 checks per child. Democrats right now are scared that if they don't pass something ASAP, then these existing child tax credits are going away. In fact, the current program expired last night. So all of you who received child tax credits before they were going to expand it, those ended last night. And there's no plan right now to expand them. I mean, actually put in place. I mean, Bernie Sanders wants it. President Biden wants it. 35 million families with monthly child tax credits dissolved, gone overnight. Without any new plan, those Americans could have received their final payment last night. So Biden wants to expand it. Manchin doesn't. That's the bottom line. And speaking to reporters earlier in the day, Biden expressed hope that the Senate could meet its own self-imposed holiday deadline. He was asked if he made progress in talks with Manchin. The president replied, some. That's what he said. But by late yesterday afternoon, Biden seemed to not want to talk about it anymore. he didn't want to talk about it because basically the whole thing has now fallen apart. At this point, Joe Manchin dragging his feet. I don't see any way that they're going to pass stimulus before the end of the year. Let me know in the comments below, do you think they're going to get anything done before the end of the year? Let's talk about Turkey now. Breaking news this morning out of Turkey, where you see all these bread lines, people waiting in line as their Turkish lira has collapsed. Well, breaking news overnight, or just actually a short time ago, Turkish President Erdogan shocked the world by raising the minimum wage by 50%. Yes, you heard me right. 50% increase overnight. The country has increased the minimum wage there. The country has also pulled back on its money printing. The Turkish lira plunged as much as 5.6% to a new record low against the dollar on Thursday. Inflation in that country is over 21%. 21%. And faster than Delta. That's the Omicron variant, according to new reports. It's 70 times faster spreadable than Delta, than the original, the OG COVID-19. Remember that guy? The OG that shut the world down? Though the severity of illness is likely to be much lower, according to a University of Hong Kong study that adds weight to the early on-the-ground observations from those South African doctors, the variant is already turning London into a ghost town. People have left the streets of London. And Europe's system to allow hassle-free travel for people vaccinated against COVID-19 is also at risk of breaking down after Italy and Greece imposed their own separate rules from the EU. And then on the business front, Apple is delaying its return to its big office in California, in Cupertino, California. Workers are not coming back there. And they're also pushing that, or they're pushing that back until January. And they've also closed three of Apple's retail stores because of concerns over COVID. And then Reddit. Reddit is about to go public. The social media platform that helped fuel this year's meme stock frenzy said it has confidentially filed for an initial public offering. The San Francisco-based company said Wednesday that the number of shares and proposed price ranges for an IPO haven't been determined just yet. It said the listing is expected to occur after the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has a chance to complete its overall review process, subject to market and other conditions. I wonder, by this thing going public, how much this will actually change the website, you know, now that they'll be answerable to shareholders instead of Redditors.
Yes. Interesting. Remember when we all logged in to watch the meme stock on Congress? Like, yeah, that was political theater. We wanted to see it.
As we saw with GameStop, maybe all the shareholders will be Redditors.
yeah. Maybe. That's what they should do.
Yeah.
Let's just take over their own place.
How very meta. Right? If they're the ones that own it. But of course, that won't be the case. Wall Street will get their hands into the whole thing. And finally today, let's talk about JFK. More JFK files have been released. Lee Harvey Oswald, according to this new CIA memo that was just released, met with the KGB just 2 months before the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. According to newly unsealed confidential documents stemming from JFK's murder, the CIA memo is part of a trove of about 1,500 documents released Wednesday by the National Archives and Records Administration. They also show that an anonymous tipster warned U.S. embassy officials in Australia a year earlier that Kennedy would be killed by the Soviet Union for a $100,000 bounty. But the tip was never passed on to the CIA. They ignored it, or they just didn't pass it on. The newly released documents were collected during a five-year review of the Kennedy assassination that wrapped up in 1997, but thousands of records still remain under seal. President Biden said he's not releasing them. What are they trying to hide about the CIA? If you want a deeper dive on this, we talked about it more deeply yesterday with Oliver Stone. Go back and watch that video. We released it separately yesterday. So just release all the damn documents already.
Well, to be fair, we didn't actually speak to Oliver Stone, although we are willing.
Yeah, I'd love to have Oliver Stone here on the show. Come on, yes. Oliver. We'd love to speak with you. Yes. All right, so there's your news.
I saw Platoon many times. I might be able to arrange that for you.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
See what you can
all
do.
All right. Call his people.
Want to talk about the economy?
You're our people. You call his people. Yes.
Now, okay. Do you want to talk about the economy?
Now, I will tell you about how Fed Chair Jerome Powell yesterday spoke of his plans for 2022 and how the federal government will address inflation. Now, thus far, for several years running, the Fed has not wanted to raise interest rates, much at the pressure of President Trump and then as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the Fed says Because inflation continues to rage out of control and hit 12-year peaks, they will begin. The plan is, they don't say exactly when, but the plan is to raise interest rates in 2022. Some are extrapolating that that means it will happen three times because it will go from around 0.3% to around 0.9%. Also, the Fed says that it will taper off buying into securities that have to do with mortgages and buy about $20 million less per month starting in January.
Yeah, this is way more aggressive. Let's be clear. This is, to me, this is an admission that they were wrong.
That they were wrong to keep interest rates down or wrong
to keep interest rates low.
Easing.
I mean, to keep interest rates artificially low.
Yes.
Why, by the way, let's go back in time a little bit, get in our hot tub time machine and go back to President Trump being president and the economy was booming. We're talking December, January of 2019, right? Into 2020. Economy's booming at the time. Jerome Powell then, with the Fed, issues another rate cut.
Yes.
Under pressure from Trump tweeting about stuff. They did not need to issue another rate cut when the economy was booming.
Well, anytime there was any faltering of the economy, that President Trump would sort of berate the Fed and say they continue to keep rates too high. If rates were lower, then the economy would boom more. He really, you know, raked him across the coals on his Twitter feed.
Yeah. But I mean, if you think about it, you think about how significant this is that they're basically saying now, hey, we were wrong about inflation. It's not transitory. It's not going to last just 2 months. That's what they told us, right? I mean, can we re-rack the tape here? That's what that's what he said multiple times, that inflation is going to be transitory. It's not going to last very long.
Yes. And now he's saying, even with these moves, it may not turn around any inflationary prices at all in the year 2022. So we'll try, but it is a bit like, you know, doing a U-turn in a cruise ship at this point.
I mean, and as a lot of people are saying, chief economist at Grant Thornton, Diane Swonk, says the pivot is complete in terms of them worrying about more persistent and problematic inflation. It is a late realization, but they are here, but they are there finally, which is important. We were all calling it. Many economists were saying this is not going to be transitory. I think they were just, a lot of people are saying, well, did Fed Chief Jerome Powell just keep the lid on things until he got renominated?
Well, look. Probably, yes, that's a good point. But every sort of basic economic textbook will tell you that keeping interest rates low results in inflation. It's just, and that any government perversion of natural economics will also result in inflation or a depression, one of those two things. Anytime there's a perversion of natural market forces, and that's kind of their job. They're perverts. They pervert natural economics. And then we sort of like, you know, we're just like, you know what I mean? I don't even know the words
Deborah,
for what I'm trying to say about
Deborah
this.
Deborah in our chat says, did anyone believe this inflation talk from the beginning?
No, it was very pacifistic.
Well, we'd like to think, Deborah, like we'd like to think, hey, you know, maybe these guys have access to data that we don't have and they know something we don't, and maybe they're right. But this is a total pivot. I mean, think about what they're doing now. They're going to raise rates three times next year, interest rates. Now, think how weird this trickles over, guys. This trickles over in all facets of our lives, okay? It's going to trickle over into housing. It's going to trickle over to your credit cards. It's going to trickle everywhere into businesses, business credit. Everything will be affected by this. On top of which, they're not going to stop anytime soon. They're going to raise rate three times next year at least. And this is them saying preliminarily they're going to do that. There could be even more rate increases.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to put an absolute screeching halt on the housing market. So all of this talk about the housing market, if you're, you know, you want to get interest rates low right now and your mortgages, mortgage rates are going to start to go up very quickly.
Yeah.
They're going to follow suit.
If you have an adjustable rate mortgage, now is the time to start to worry, because that rate will adjust higher in the new year. So you might want to think about locking in rates. Remember, if you are considering refinancing right now, you have to make sure that you're going to stay in that house long enough to recover the costs of the new loan. I believe we have several videos on Morris Invest about how to calculate if that's the right thing for you to do. But you should be running your numbers. I'm sorry to give you Christmas break homework, but you gotta.
Yeah,
you
this
know?
Is a time of year to think about it. And Big Chills in our chat, Big Chills 71, says y'all should watch the latest Peter Schiff podcast. He's spot on about this whole inflation and the Fed commentary. Check that out. Sam Dorchester says they should increase the interest rates to 5% now, but that probably is not enough. And that's a great point, Sam. There's a lot of people, including myself, that thinks that this isn't even aggressive enough. Like, I think that they should even be doing more than this. So you're gonna increase your tapering, slowing down the bond buying into March. You're going to do it basically three times faster. Mm-hmm. But still, why does Wall Street still need even $30 billion?
And why do they continue to buy up these mortgage-backed securities? There are some experts who say that these are sort of a smokescreen for them to buy up their friends and big business stocks under this, like, we buy up mortgage-backed securities to keep the market afloat. But what's actually in these funds, people worry, because the government hired BlackRock last year to take care of what it is that they're buying inside these funds. And it's not really the junk bonds that we think it is. It's funds that have things like Walmart and Home Depot and that kind of thing. So who are they really helping? Like, oh, good, we're not going to buy stock in Walmart anymore as a government. That's nice, right? Why are they doing that in the first place when we're hitting a debt ceiling? I don't know.
Yeah. And just to give you a frame of reference here, the Financial Times has a good layout in today's paper about exactly where these rates will likely go when they raise these rates. So here we are, obviously, in the lower left hand part of your screen here in 2021, right, where interest rates are zero. I mean, zero. I mean, talk about artificially low, right? And then so, okay, we're going to move up maybe to 0.5. I mean, this is still low. Even to Sam's point in our chat, 5% wouldn't even be on this chart.
Yeah.
I mean, the very first mortgage I ever had was like a 6.75% interest rate. Do you remember your first mortgage?
It was adjustable and it was in the threes. And then the market adjusted way down and I benefited from that for a while because then I was paying more in principal. So that was nice. So, you know, you play the game when you've got an adjustable rate. Go ahead, David.
I would set their interest rate based on how bad they've, you know, like their credit score. Their credit is bad based on how they've handled our economy.
You mean the Federal
government?
Reserve?
Yeah, whoever's borrowing the money. Obviously, it's contributed to the inflation and the issues that we're having. And they've proved that they, you know, shouldn't have that kind of money. So in order to fix it, we should charge them the interest rates they would charge us if we had
bad
credit.
I think he makes a good point. What he's talking about is these big companies that are able to get 0% interest loans right now from the mm-hmm. federal government. So all of these companies, by the way, all of these companies have been buying back their own shares. So
yes.
Think about what crony BS this is, guys. If you want to understand how these guys operate and why these guys are so corrupt and all of these big banks, I mean, it's all part of Washington. Washington and Wall Street big banks, they're all one thing. So the Federal Reserve creates a policy that keeps interest rates at zero. These Wall Street banks, these Wall Street companies borrow at 0% interest rates. The incentive for them, the Fed said it this way, is so that they would hire people and do research and development. They don't do either of those things. What are they doing instead? They're buying back their own shares, which increases their profits, increases artificially their stock price while they're still sitting on massive debt. But they don't care about
and they have this crappy credit system that lets them loan it out to people based on their credit score at like 12, 15, 20% interest when they're paying zero for it.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, you know, this is a huge pivot from Powell. This is and he said, like, the reason we're moving this way is because, you know, we're taking this much more hawkish position is because we want to be out in front of this, basically, that we want to be, you know, we want to be out in front of this. We're sort of like playing 3D chess, I guess. In my opinion, they're way behind the eight ball now. Inflation's already running
yes.
high.
Yeah.
Little people are getting crushed. Wall Street's doing fine. And you're going to continue to buy up these bonds through the next year. End it now and raise interest rates.
Yes.
I think it would lower prices. I think it would lower inflation. And
it's just at this point too hard for them to answer for keeping them at zero.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. More news to come on the show today. We're going to talk about rising healthcare costs. We've got so much to get to here on the show. And is math racist? interesting discussion about mathematics being racist. But first...
But first, we'll tell you about our show sponsor over at SimpliSafe. Now, would you like a home alarm and security system that's easy to set up and easy to use, and you don't have to consult with a million people about where to set things and how to put things up and how it works and all of that stuff? That's where SimpliSafe comes in. It is a really easy home security system and home protection system that you can set up by yourself and manage by your own self. This week, our friends at SimpliSafe are giving listeners early access to all their holiday deals with 40% off their award-winning home security. Now, we love SimpliSafe because it has everything that you need to make your home safe and less likelihood for, like, the cat to set off an alarm and then you get calls at work when you're in a meeting. That absolutely has happened to me before. Let's see. They have cameras, indoor and outdoor. They have comprehensive sensors. It's all monitored around the clock by trained professionals who can help you the instant you need it. SimpliSafe was named the best home security system of 2021 by U.S. News and World Reports. And you can easily customize it for your home in minutes and even get free customization recommendations based on what the camera can see and how the equipment talks to each other. There are no long-term contracts or commitments. It's very easy to get started and have peace of mind. So take advantage of this holiday deal. It's a great time to get this. Get 40% off your new home security by visiting simplysafe.com/invest. Again, that's simplysafe with an I.com/invest for 40% off your entire system.
Can I say something really quick about the economy before we move on?
Yes.
Everybody always rips on capitalism, but the thing is, this is absolute proof that we are not dealing with capitalism, because in a capitalist, truly capitalist society, those companies would have been left to fail and we would not be dealing with this stuff. Like, they wouldn't have been bailed out by us and all the other stuff. So,
yes,
you know, people that talk about capitalism, this is what we have is crony capitalism, which is where they get bailed out. They can fail or do whatever, make bad decisions, and we just bail them out.
That's yes. A good point. And I mean, I'm reading Woke Incorporated. I mean, you learn about this crony capitalism and stakeholder capitalism where you're picking winners and losers. You're basically having these cronies that are picking winners and losers. They're funneling money to their friends. Like, look, during the financial crisis, like Hank Paulson, who was Treasury Secretary at the time, right, decided, like, okay, you know what? We're going to bail out my friend who I went to college with, not me, Hank Paulson, my friends at Goldman Sachs. We're going to bail them out.
Yeah.
But we're going to let Lehman Brothers collapse. Why? No, because I went to college with the guy at Goldman Sachs. Like, literally, they still to this day, even in his own book, has no justification as to why the federal government picked a winner, Goldman Sachs, over a loser, Lehman Brothers. No justification. The only difference is he knew a guy. Like, that's it. That's how they operate. That's just a small anecdotal example, but it's a big one that had reverberations across the entire economy, of course. So, all right, let's get to this story. Let's talk about the healthcare costs in the United States. It's no secret that the United States healthcare system is a disaster. And healthcare costs in a new study are keeping many Americans, one out of every three Americans, from even going to a doctor or a hospital if they have something that needs to be taken care of. They just can't afford it, don't want to worry about the deductible, don't want to worry about the ambulance costs or anything else. So they decide, do they just stay home instead because of these new healthcare cost numbers?
That's right. According to a new poll, Americans have reached their breaking point. That means 30% of them have postponed or just not gone in for treatment that they otherwise need because they cannot afford it. That doesn't necessarily mean they don't have insurance. It could mean that they have insurance and it's still too expensive for whatever the treatment is, because healthcare system has no real rules about what they can charge, because last year the Supreme Court ruled that now hospitals have to disclose what they're charging patients. We now can see with our own eyes that they change the price based on who is paying and whether it's an insurance company or a cash payer, and they can just do that. The Supreme Court only ruled that we can see it. They did not rule that they must stop it, right? Mm-hmm. And so because we have no real socialized medicine that provides service for all, most of us are going to have to now rank our care versus based on how important it is. And the problem with that is when you put off preventative treatment and you don't have your regular, say, annual scans or mammograms or colonoscopies or anything like that, you are not finding what could save your life. So this is obviously very troubling, but not if you're an insurance company. If you're a medical provider, you can continue to surge your prices and it's fine. It's all right for some.
You know, Lisa Pettit in our chat says, my deductible is $5,000.
What?
$5,000.
And you have to hit that in order to get anything covered?
My Imperial Majesty in our chat says, my deductible is $8,700.
Wow.
Holy smokes. Uluhula says, my doctor charges like 90% less if I pay out of pocket.
Yes. Cash buyers will always get the best rates because they know they can't surge it for an insurance company. So in fact, I refer you to the interview we did with, say his name,
Andrew Schoonover of Crowd Health.
Yes. And he talks about how if you use his system and you are always a cash buyer, you will get the lowest amount.
This is a really startling number though. David, you were going to say,
well, I was just going to say there's a, like a, you know, when those urgent cares close to my house here, and when I don't have insurance. So when I go in, I get cash prices. So I see exactly what things are going to cost me. They're like, this is going to cost you $60. This is going to cost you $30. And they break it down for me. But then in insurance, that's probably like $800 or $2,000.
Yes.
Look at that. I mean, just looking through the chat here, David, you want to throw these up on the screen. Becky Medvet says mine is $5K. Lisa Birch Eisel says my deductible is $8,700.
So living in Europe right now and seeing how what the actual price of healthcare is, I am shocked. And I usually, when they give me a bill, I just start laughing because I'm like, really? So my daughter had an ear
laughing
screen.
Laughing in a good way.
Like, are you serious? This is how cheap it is? And they're like, this is the price.
Well, someone just said in our chat they had an ear infection. $1,500 for an ear infection.
So our youngest had inflamed ears for two checkups in a row and the doctor was concerned about it. Turns out she had COVID. And so she was inflamed for a different reason. But we didn't know it at the time. So he wanted her to go to a full screening of her hearing. And they didn't charge my insurance for one of her visits. And so they gave me the full price bill. And they're like, sorry, we don't have your insurance on here. Here's the bill. For a full ear exam, it was €45. And I was like, wait a minute. Right. This is full price. It's right. $45.
This is a typo.
Yeah. And they're like, no, this is the price. So they ran my insurance and they're like, oh, here you go, $250. With my insurance, €2.50.
Oh, which, I thought you meant $250.
No, $2? Which ends up being about $4, right? But even out of pocket, I would have paid about $50 for, like, that's the price of getting a child an ear exam. And that is not an exorbitant price for thinking about I'm paying for an expert's time with their expert equipment. In America, I happen to know that that would cost at least $250.
Yeah.
Well, and think about this, because these insurance companies have people that mitigate risk. So they know what things cost and how much they pay out and everything. So they know that if they set you at a $9,000 deductible, that chances are you'll never hit that with medical expenses. So you're paying them by the month for that $9,000 that they'll never dip into, which means they never have to pay anything. And they know that because these risk analyzers know what it's going to cost somebody.
Matthew Stusser in our chat says, I had minor hand surgery in the Czech Republic. It was €15.
$15.
$15.
Yeah.
$15. Yeah, they don't.
I mean, this is my regular experience with healthcare here. And we have very good healthcare. I've been thrilled with our doctors. And I spent dental procedures, you know, $60 for a checkup. That's it.
And that's why so many Americans are going massively into debt. I mean, that's why medical bills right now, as this new study points out, medical bills are spiraling so far out of control that even 20% of the country's highest earners, those making over $120,000 a year, say the cost of seeing a doctor keeps them from seeking treatment. You know, it's bad now that the wealthy, the top 20% of earners, they're at their breaking point, basically.
Yeah. You know, a new book came out, came out this year called Social Security, Medicare and Government Pensions. And he talks about how people who are on American socialized medicine, right, Medicare and Medicaid, have consultants to help them pay for the exorbitant prescription drug prices that are allowed, right? We're allowed to gouge senior citizens. And a lot of these consultants that actually work for the government help people get their prescription medicine from Canada or Mexico. Like, this is part of like how our own system says, I know it's too expensive here. You need it. This is our program. Let me help you order it from a different country. Jeez. Something's wrong when that is the case.
Yeah.
But it's allowed. Why? Because of Congress. It's allowed because Congress wants it to be allowed.
It starts right at the federal government level, and they're absolutely in crony capitalism relationships with all of these drug companies, these healthcare providers. They're all friends, and it perpetuates this system. I mean, yes. That's exactly where it comes from. It's not your fault; it's their fault, and that's the broken system that we have in the United States. Unfortunately,
it's this system that actually made me start looking at Medicare for All, because I'm like, why should somebody that by no fault of their own ends up getting cancer, and then they're riddled with debt for the rest of their life that they can't get out of? Like, you're talking cancer, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of bills and hospitalizations and stuff like that. Why should that person have that debt? Like, we should not have medical debt in this country.
Yeah.
No one should.
No. And it's absolutely life altering. Forget the injury or forget the surgery. Now you're saddled with this, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. You're never going to be able to pay it back.
Yeah.
Never going to be able to pay it back.
And there just really is no recourse for that kind of thing. It's really scary. And so what did our Congress do is punish us for not having health insurance, through the Affordable Care Act,
right?
Meaning you have to have health insurance or else you pay a penalty.
Right.
That doesn't really help. It doesn't. I mean, it did bring down costs of certain programs, but not across the board. It's not accessible for everybody by any means.
Yeah. Awful. Let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. We've got more news to get to here on the show, including this story out of New York City. So New York City is the first largest city in the United States to ban gas stoves and gas heating in all new buildings that are going to be either renovations or new buildings starting in 2024. So that means they're going to rely on electric power basically for any heating, any cooking.
That's right. No gas stoves.
So why is gas so bad?
Isn't New York the place where during the summer they tell you not to run your AC because the power grid can't handle it?
Right. Yeah. How is the power grid going to be able to handle this new move towards electricity in the biggest city in the world?
Well, it won't. So you'll freeze.
Right. So what's so wrong with natural gas? Like, what is the big issue here?
Well, it's a combustible fossil fuel, and there's only so much of that, right? It's only going to get more expensive. And also, it's not that good for humans. In fact, a recent study showed that 1,114 premature deaths were associated with gas heating indoors. There are also studies that show that having gas heating inside can lead to more incidents of asthma in children and heart attacks in adults. There's a great Mother Jones piece from earlier in this year that I linked to in the newsletter, and we will, maybe we can put it in the chat. Can you do that?
I can try to.
Okay. It talked about how, the fossil fuel industry pays thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to not only lobbyists, obviously, but also sort of like chat room promoters, like influencers, strange influencers.
Like Grover, he's a big influencer right now.
Yes. For instance, one guy would get on Nextdoor and talk about how, it was great to have gas heating. But really the PR push now is to make people believe that like it's okay to have gas indoors, just make sure it's well ventilated, because obviously you're combusting a fossil fuel inside your house, and most people do it in closed doors because it's cold outside, right? But it's releasing gas fumes that you then are breathing in. It's so bad now. A lot of people are really becoming aware of how dangerous it is to live inside with these. We had them. We used to sleep with it on the gas fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
And we would close our bedroom door and sleep with it. It scares me to think of it now. But even Porter Novelli, which is the biggest public relations firm, arguably, in the world, dropped the fossil fuel industry from their client list in 2020 because they felt like, we just can't promote this anymore. They're trying to have a reputation for things that are like healthful and good for the earth. Now, if you're one of those people who says,
well, there's a couple people in our chat, like James Figueroa says, I hate electric stoves. I can't get the right temperature for cooking.
Me too. I hate it too, but I will never go back after you read this information and you realize, it's probably not good to be indoors with combustible fuel and breathing it in all the time. And, I've just come to get used to it. We moved this year and we were considering putting a gas pipe in through our kitchen because it only had electric. And right around this research came out and I was like, no.
Yeah, literally. I'm serious. Like literally we were moving in and they had no natural gas and it's actually pretty expensive. We later learned, but this research came out. And Grim put it in the chat here, the Mother
Thank
Jones
you,
piece.
Grim's
Thank
school.
You, Grim, for putting that in the chat. But this research came out right around the same time we were moving, and we were thinking about getting a natural gas line in, because I know that Natalie loved to cook with gas. And this research came out, and that's how quickly she was able to be swayed.
But I was always like, oh, we need to replace this. I absolutely don't want an electric stove. I'm not saying I love it. I don't. But I'm okay on it. I've gotten used to it.
I like induction. I have an induction heater. I have gas now in this house, but before that I had electric and I didn't like it. So I got induction and
that's what we have.
To control the temperature.
That's what
we have induction.
We have induction. Yeah.
Yeah. It like nullified a bunch of my pots and pans. So I had to buy new ones.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand that. What's the difference? Like we had a few old pots and pans that didn't work on this new stove with the induction. Like what's the difference?
It's like MagSafe. Like it doesn't,
can't.
It can't read some of the...
It doesn't even recognize.
It's like done through friction or something.
Yeah, it doesn't recognize certain pots or pans. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even...
I think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
Exactly.
It's a learning curve. And I hate this research, you guys. But you know me, I'm like always willing to take the coffee pot away if I realize it'll give you cancer or my kids. So I'm like, whoa, how did I not know this? All like we used to turn those gas powered stoves on and put our baby's little crib in front of it because like it gives me anxiety.
The fireplace, not a stove.
No, not the stove. The fireplace with like a glass mirror that they can't touch. But we put the little bouncy seats. Like, oh, it's cold out. Let's just put them in front of the
fume, natural gas fireplace.
The fume
emitter.
That must be why when I turn ours on, like after about an hour or so, I like crash out. I pass out, sleep.
You might want to get that checked, man.
Yeah.
Just going to say.
Not good.
Yeah. You're like, every time I put on my gas-powered stove or my fireplace.
I almost die.
I feel lightheaded and I go to sleep. I don't know.
Well, and until this segment, I never really put it together, but I always end up taking a nap when that damn thing's on.
Okay.
Just don't light a match. You might want to get that checked. I mean, but yes, even without having a leak or a problem, it is not good for you.
No.
So, even if it's fully functioning the way that it says on the box, it's still not good for you.
Asthma and heart attacks, you guys. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't realize how much there's a lobbyist and a public relations effort to make you think that this is safe. Right. Because I guess rational thinking would show you that it's not. But I didn't want to feel that way. So, yes, we applaud New York for this move. We don't know how their power grid will then adapt to all electric heating, but we'll see.
I just love that the Mother Jones piece about how the gas industry is paying Instagram influencers to gush over these gas stoves. Like, I mean, come on. Really? Like, this is what they're trying to do. It's like, oh, I love cooking on gas. It's so much better. Like, let's just go to Instagram. You know how much trouble this is when you have a fossil fuel company paying influencers to try to sway public opinion about
and
it.
And when your public relations firm says we can't even in good conscience,
like, anymore.
Like Porter Novelli represents 7-Up and they won't,
Like look at this one. This was like an Instagram post. Like, hey, who's up for some breakfast for dinner? I'm bringing you some stovetop huevos rancheros. Did you know that natural gas provides better cooking results? She writes, and she's paid for this post by the natural gas lobby.
I mean, I'm not going to say that she's wrong. It's great cooking with gas. I have to admit, I love it. But I won't do it anymore.
Hey, so. Look, you caught me in this candid
photo. It's a beautiful stove, you guys.
You just caught me candidly photo here. I love this. Cooking up on my family's favorite holiday breakfast, starting with all the veggies, right here on my gas-powered stove.
Obviously, none of them have seen Gasland.
What's Gasland?
That fracking documentary?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy. Are we going to have to watch that?
I don't know if I want to watch that. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm sorry that's uncomfortable news, you guys.
Hey, that's what this show is about, making you uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it sucks. You know, you only grow when you're uncomfortable. I feel like my mother-in-law and father-in-law, they're building a new house, you know?
Yeah.
And they have, there's restrictions, though, in Idaho, in this particular area, where they can't have like a wood stove, which is crazy to me, but they can't have a wood stove, so they're forcing them to get gas.
Yeah.
Not a stove specifically for the fireplace. Has to be a gas fireplace, which is worse for the environment. It just makes no sense to me. But this is, this is politicians who are in cahoots with the natural gas companies. Is there a wood lobby? Clayton, that's the thing,
you're
right?
You're wrong. I'm going to call you out on this one. This is progress.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Progress.
Yeah. We got the railroad, and now we're working on...
Follow the money, guys. Follow the money. The natural gas lobby is huge. Is there a wood lobby? A firewood lobby? No. You call up John down the street who brings his dump truck over to your house and dumps a cord of wood in your driveway.
There's an anti-lobby. His name's Smokey the Bear.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Pay attention to this stuff, folks. This is the kind of stuff that, politicians try to sweep under the rug and, journalists have to dig for it. And we have to cover these stories here on the show because no one else is doing it, Anyway.
All right,
we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about, is mathematics racist? Yes, some people believe.
Yes, Brian Cody, solar is the way.
Yes.
With you on that.
We're going to talk about math being racist. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Blue Chew. Oh, yeah. It's time for Blue Chew, baby. Blue Chew is just what the doctor ordered for the holidays. Blue Chew, time for the Christmas season. We all could use a little stiff breeze. That's right. This time of year. And this episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, confidence can take you far in life. It can also help you in the bedroom, especially when it comes to stepping up to the plate. That's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead to be ready whenever the mood arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com. You consult with one of their licensed medical providers. And once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's done all online. No visits to a doctor's office. No awkward conversations. No waiting in line at a pharmacy. Not having to pay a $5,000 deductible like we talked about on the show today. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, prepared and shipped direct to your front door. You've got to try it. So if you could benefit from a little extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help you. Don't be shy about it, guys. We've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew for free when you use our promo code INVEST at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's right. You can try it for free. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code INVEST to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the show. We really, really appreciate it. Their sponsorship of the show. They've been one of our longest sponsors, and we really thank them for supporting independent journalism and everything that we do here on the show. They've got a great sense of humor, and I like a company with a good sense of humor. So thanks to Blue Chew. All right.
Okay. Is math racist? That is the question that we already know from your intonation about what you think about it.
Well, hold on. No, let's just set it up. This is what the USA Today... This is how the USA Today, they posted an actual story with that headline, is math racist? This was the USA Today article, should schools alter teaching methods, okay?
Uh-huh.
That's what their original story, and if you find the link, that's still what it is on the permanent URL, but then they got so much flack for it that they changed the actual headline to this. Now here is the headline, is math education racist? Debate rages over changes to how the U.S. teaches the subject.
Okay. So the actual methodology here that we're talking about is changing how you teach math from a more hands-on way rather than just paper and pencils. You can see from this picture, it's about giving students more manipulatables, right? So
what's a manipulable?
Well, look at what this child is doing right here. Like they have dots, right? They're trying to figure out presumably like how to divide things. And so they actually get like a graphic example of what that means. It means you get them up and you get them moving to introduce the concepts. For example, when my son was learning fractions, we used Lego bricks, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of Legos. We used Lego bricks to show him like percentages or fractions of certain things. So for instance, we had an 8 brick, which was just 2 by 2. And then we took the 4 by 2 brick and the 2 by 2, or just the 2 mm-hmm. brick. And I could show him like, this is a fraction of this. It's 1/4 of how many dots are here. That's really what it's talking about, is taking math and instead of just like making it concepts that you have to work out with paper and pencil,
like this guy,
right, is getting them up and allowing them to understand hands-on what these concepts mean. The reason it was presented this way in this article is because a lot of times the way that math is taught on pencil and paper, it takes a lot of grit to learn it, because it's hard to sit there and just dump those concepts into your head if you're not manipulating anything. And most students of color and underprivileged students don't have fancy tutors to push it further into your head. They don't have the same teacher hour ratio, right? How much time they get with each teacher. They have larger classrooms. So it's not just math, though, that students, underprivileged students, have a problem with, but they're trying to actually make it so that everyone is an apprentice in a classroom and students can help one another if they're actually up and moving around things to teach these concepts.
Well, this is a ridiculous headline, though. Is math racist? I mean, no, math can't be racist any more than this mug can be racist. Well, I mean, I guess if
maybe,
this
actually
mug,
that's not true.
If maybe this it mug, can be classist.
I mean, or is it just a commentary on our broken education system in the United States?
I'm going to challenge you with that, because actually I think English math is racist, and I'm going to tell you why. Why do you think that Chinese and Asian language speakers are better at math? Now, okay, I'm not going to give you an opportunity to give me a racist answer, so I'll just answer it for you. Is because they only have numbers 1 through 10, and then they don't actually give names to, say, 11, 12, 13, 14. Once they get past 10, 11 is actually 10 and 1. And I don't know how to count in Chinese, you guys. I just understand the concept that instead of that each number above 10 is like 20 and 1 is 21, is 20 and 2 is 22. And it's not a complicated, for instance, 4 is C and 7 is qui. I'm sorry about my pronunciation. But for us, these are long words, 4 and 7, right? And so the concept of moving around these numbers in an Asian language is much, much easier. So if I asked you to subtract 2 and 2, which is 22, you understand the tens place and ones place a heck of a lot faster than me saying, Clayton, subtract 22 and 14. They can do it automatically faster because it's in. So I would say that Asian speaking languages, they've laid it out in an easier way to understand for the human brain. For instance, if you gave them a sequence of numbers like 4, 8, 5, 3, 9, 7, we can't in our mind figure out how to sequence that. If I tell you to memorize it, it would take you a lot longer. If I told a Chinese speaker, they would get it right almost every time because of the way it's laid out. So inherently, the way that English people teach and learn math is harder. So math
that doesn't make
is
it racist.
Yeah,
how is it racist? Racist implies
it's not necessarily racist, but it's harder for us.
It's just harder. Okay, well then you just said I'm going to tell you how it's racist. Well, you didn't tell us how it's racist.
Well, it's racially disadvantaged because we are English speakers.
That's not a race. English is not a race.
Okay, we are functionally disadvantaged as English speakers. I'm defending the fact that math is harder for English speaking people and we need more tools.
Okay,
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, that's better. It's not racist, though. Like, you know, like math is wearing like a white hood and burning crosses in the yard in English in social studies front yard.
Okay.
Like that's, you know, that to me is like.
But the point that math is just logical and easy and accessible for everyone doesn't.
No. And I will say, look, I struggled with math. Math was not my greatest subject by a long shot. And so if there was a methodology that allowed me to learn math better than just like plopping a piece of paper in front of me and there's a chalkboard up there on the wall mm-hmm. and that's how they're teaching me. And if there was manipulatables, you know, there's things that we could use and describe it. And here's how we're moving these things around as yes. they describe in this piece, like Minecraft and yeah. being able to use these different things. I might have done so much better. Heck, if I had like an iPad that I could have done things with, I might have done so much better than just doing this on paper. I had to have a math tutor. My best friend, Ben, had to come over to my house and he got a perfect on his math SATs. And he used to tutor me in math. Just so I could pass algebra. So I get it.
Well, most education favors the privileged. So, I mean, that's kind of what I was
saying.
Given.
That's why I was saying I think it's more of a classist thing. Like, I had a teacher, Mr. Johnson. I still remember him. And I was not going to pass algebra. And he helped me. And I still wouldn't. I still should not have passed. But I was a junior taking algebra with freshmen. And I just feel like it's that same thing that's a problem with the education system because I've not used algebra since I've graduated school. I've not had to do any of that stuff. And the thing is, like, we're putting all these kids in the same box. So I think that the system is inherently classist in a way that's like, why does everybody have to pass that? Why did I have to have that to even move on with my life? Hmm. You know,
not used any algebra? None.
I can't think of any algebra. I used to want to do stand up comedy, right? So that's what I started doing when I was 16 years old, going to nightclubs and doing stand up comedy, and that's what I wanted to do with my life. And at that age, and I used to say to my mom, like, Mom, I'm not ever going to use algebra. I do not need calculus. I'm telling you right now, I hate it. I'm going to be standing on a stage doing comedy or I'm never going
to
need this.
Don't ever tell that story to our kids.
I won't. But if my son comes to me and says, Dad, all I want to do is draw and paint and sketch. Daddy, am I ever going to need to use calculus? I will say to him, Buddy, don't tell your mom this, but no, you're never going to use this.
Unless you're building rockets. I'm 51 years old.
I've
only used limited English.
Yeah, I barely use English.
I really appreciate the idea that in the Western world, we give ourselves these labels like I'm good at math, I'm good at science, I'm good at reading, I'm good at writing. And in Asian countries, they don't do that. Either you're a good learner or you're not. It's do you try hard? Are you learning to learn? It's not necessarily about succeeding in every subject. It's either you're a good learner or you're not. And they don't use language like that. And I'm really careful in my house. I hate it when someone says, I'm not a math person. We have a family member that always tries to say that around our kids. And I'm like, because I think these things matter. And it bothers me when people tell themselves these limiting beliefs.
What was that book that specifically talked about this issue where, you know, like
Brain Rules for Baby, I think it was.
Yeah, where children in America, like where we're like, oh, I'm not a math person. Then it gets you off the hook from ever. And it actually reinforces the fact that you're not a math person. When in fact, if you just had some, you know, maybe better structure on your education, you'd be an excellent math person.
Well, I wish that they would have more, because I know that if I ended up being a really good musician and I wanted to play music, and had they pushed me in that direction more so than trying to force me into the things that I didn't want to do that made me not like being at school and not like participating because I felt stupid. If they would have pointed me into something that is a mathematical thing, music is a mathematical thing, rhythm is a mathematical thing. If they would have pointed me in that direction to give me a math that I could understand and comprehend, I think that would have been like, I think that would be better for kids if they would find those, you know, outside of the box things to push kids into.
Yeah. Okay. Another great book worth reading about this is Mind in the Making by Ellen Galinsky. If you're interested in just ways to inspire your children to be better learners, that and Brain Rules for Baby, if you've got a really tiny one, you know, it's worth talking about these differences, because if your child gives themselves these labels early that I'm not a math person, and they decide that at 7 years old, 8 years old, they still have 10 years then to struggle with this subject. They have to. And you're setting them up at a disadvantage. So, but I understand the headline here is that some children are going to be disadvantaged because they don't have this hands-on learning opportunity.
Steven in our chat says, my dad was a math genius. I could throw any numbers at him to solve and he would come out with the answer in seconds. I did not inherit his math genius. Yeah. Yeah. Remember Tanya says trigonometry. Remember trigonometry?
Mm-hmm. I loved all of that stuff.
I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can say it, but I never did it.
I mean, I was a history, you know, I loved history class. I loved social studies and I loved English. When it came to math, I hated it. You know, I just was not, you know, you can't go around saying you like everything.
You don't have to like everything, but you should not say I am not a math person. It means you were not given an opportunity to put all of your learning skills into learning this subject. Right. That doesn't mean you're bad at it. I really reject that everybody can learn something with the right teacher.
What was the other day you said? Well, I think you're right about that. Yeah. There was something the other day said, you know, if I had 12 years, I would never be able to do this thing.
What did
you
say? Yes.
You used that exact language.
This is true. I said if I had 1 year, I could never, which was we came from my children's orchestra. My son's middle school and upper school orchestra concert. And I said, if you gave me a full year, I could never learn how to teach children to do this because I don't play any instruments. I can't read music. And I don't know how to teach people how to, like, you're teaching each child a different instrument. Like, that is something I'm saying.
Like the orchestra teacher is like, you know, like over here, like, let's bring up the sound over here and over here. The girl starts, you know, this over
That's
here.
That's called a band.
A band. Yeah. Yeah, Natalie's like, if you gave me a year, I couldn't do
that. I couldn't. If you gave me 5 years, I could.
That's your very own language that you're not supposed to do.
You're right.
If you had a year, I bet you could learn how to teach a group of kids how to play orchestra.
I'd have to learn every one of those instruments in a year.
Right.
And then learn how to teach.
Because you saw her, the teacher, she was like, she grabbed the violin from the one little girl and she tuned it right before. Then she went over and got the cello and tuned that. Then she went over to the, you know, yes, she knows all of those instruments.
Yeah, I couldn't do it in a year.
Hey, that's
maybe
a challenge.
10.
That's a challenge. Should we do that, David? Like, have Natalie learn all of those instruments in a year?
Don't want to.
I think she should learn that. She should get that bass drum thing that goes on your back with, like, the tambourine and the banjo.
Okay.
Like, the whole one-man band thing. And yeah, the guy play all of that.
Where the guy walks down the street and he goes like this.
Like Dick Van Dyke?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Dick Van Dyke.
You know, I will say, though.
It's a jolly holiday with Mary.
I play guitar and all that. And I taught myself how to play it. And so I never really learned like theory or anything like that. And I had this kid's mom. She's like, I really would love my son to learn guitar. Could you teach him? I'm like, well, I'll try. I don't know, you know, a lot about it, but I'll try. And he didn't, he had no rhythm. And so I could not teach him how to rhythmically play the strings. And so he was trying to understand rhythm and mathematically. He's like, how can I mathematically understand? Because he was a very brilliant kid. He ended up working for like Lockheed or something on their spy systems or something. But I could not comprehend somebody that it was like the jerk. Like he could not hold rhythm at all. And I was like, I don't know how to teach somebody that doesn't have rhythm as a base level.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is that inherited? Like, you know, is that something you learn?
I think
genetics?
It has to be.
I don't know about that.
Which
I'm
think
saying
is the same as math.
For academics, you either you learn to learn or you don't learn to learn. And then some subjects you cannot apply your learning skills to because you don't have the right mentor. But I do not think that there is anybody who is predispositioned to be better at one subject and just terrible at another. I reject it. And I think the science is behind that too. But tell ourselves that.
Dyslexia could kind of prove you right. You know, people with dyslexia can learn how to read in a very different way than we do.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
That's right, Joe. All right, let's move the show along. We're going to get to what's trending in a moment, but you want to tell us about this story before we get there?
Okay. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has floated a law that will allow parents and I suppose students or ex-students to sue anyone who is teaching critical race theory in the school. So if you're keeping count, this is now the third major state that is offering a citizens-based litigation program for something that you don't like. So in California, now Gavin Newsom has decided you can sue people regarding gun ownership. In Texas, the law before the Supreme Court currently stands says that you can sue people for abortions that had nothing to do with you, right? And now in Florida, you'll be able to sue school districts and also companies for teaching things that you don't like. So when Americans complain that we have too litigious of a society, well, look to your leaders, because this is what they're doing. Now, obviously, there are a lot of we can have the discussion about whether critical race theory should be in a school system or not. I'm going to put that aside for now because I don't want to have that discussion today. What I do want to point out, though, is that this will increase legal costs for schools, and schools are not the cash cow system that you maybe think they are. You already know teachers are underpaid.
Yes, teacher.
they'll be suing the school district specifically, which, you know, school district is they're dividing pennies right now to even get resources to the classrooms. So,
like we showed here on the show the other day, you know, those teachers in South Dakota were having to clamor for dollar bills at that on the ice skating rink as part of that little dog and pony show they were doing. So they don't have any money. But here's what I don't get is that, first of all, it's already outlawed in Florida. Like teaching critical race theory in public schools is already banned in public schools in Florida. But Ron DeSantis is taking it one step further. Of course, he's positioning himself for 2024. He wants to run for president. He wants to be like the anti-woke candidate. That's fine. DeSantis, though, says that its core lessons are still being taught in schools there. And he said, quote, "In Florida, we're taking a stand against the state-sanctioned racism that is critical race theory. We won't allow Florida tax dollars to be spent teaching kids to hate our country or to hate each other. We also have a responsibility to ensure that parents have the means to vindicate their rights when it comes to enforcing state standards."
But then it will be Florida tax dollars that has to defend these lawsuits, right? So if a school wants to stand up for itself, it will have to use tax dollars for legal defense. And if they have to pay anything out to that person, they will also use tax dollars. So I don't follow.
Yeah. And the bill allows parents to collect any attorney's fees, including a similar provision as the Texas bill. Plaintiffs there can also collect attorney's fees in Texas. I don't know. I mean,
I understand that we litigate our values in this country. Right. And in sometimes that's necessary. But you have to, you know, think about litigating just to solve something, right? As the only means to solve something that will hurt. This will hurt other children, right? There's no other solution other than you hurt other kids. You hurt other teachers. It will lower their pay.
These kids shouldn't be involved in our adult politics anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like they're
being
the
torn
recipient. Yeah, exactly.
They're in the middle, and it's like they're watching like two parents who are about to get a divorce fighting back and forth, you know?
Yeah.
And who ends up suffering the most in those situations? It's the kids, always.
Right. Refer back to the story we just did. So now they'll, less hands-on learning for you. Learn algebra from a book, kid.
What I don't understand is, let's just take a 30,000-foot view of this, though, is that I don't think any of these people even know what they're arguing for. Like, we've seen, I think politicians don't even know what they're upset about. Like, specifically, what are you upset about when it comes to critical race theory? Like, if you're talking about the 1970s academic papers that started it, okay, that's one thing. But if you're talking about a teacher talking about the injustices of slavery in the United States, and maybe here's an example. We learned that in Georgia, there's actually slavery happening right now. Did you see that story last week?
No.
That there are literally people being kept against their will and no pay in the state of Georgia, in the United States of America. Hey, we could talk about China taking religious Uyghurs and putting them in concentration camps and sterilizing them, right? So imagine a teacher in school down at anywhere in the United States is teaching children about the horrors of slavery and says, in fact, right now in the United States, there is modern day slavery happening today. And in China, this is what's happening. Well, is that bad? Can we not teach that under this law? Can we not talk about the injustices of certain people owning other people? That would be troubling to me, like if you're trying to pretend that none of these bad things ever happened.
Or is it that we can't discuss slavery at all anymore because there are certain narratives that we no longer believe? For instance, Lincoln freed the slaves, right? Lincoln famously said that he would keep the unions together if it meant abolishing slavery, or he would keep slavery if it meant keeping the union together, right? Abolishing slavery was not his number one goal.
Right.
His number one goal was keeping the United States together. And so we have to then... So, you know, no more celebrating Abraham Lincoln as the person who abolished slavery and making Lincoln hats and saying, like, you know, and so
or
taking a look at that actual history. I'm not saying Abraham Lincoln was not a good guy. He had his merits, sure, but let's not, like, you know, say that.
Make him a deity.
Yes,
right. That's what we do with our leaders. And so we can't, people got so uncomfortable when Michelle Obama talked about she's living in the White House, a house that was built by slaves.
Yes.
And I remember all these people like, oh, you just better be thankful that you're living in this house. Who cares who built it? You know, she couldn't talk about something uncomfortable as the White House being built by slaves.
Yes.
And it was.
Yeah.
So we can't, we just have to pretend that that didn't happen. Like, we can't have a discussion about these honest things.
Yeah.
Like, that's.
Well, it's like a reframing of, like, there was slavery and then white people saved, you know, the slaves and that's how it ended is a very uncomfortable way to tell that story, if not fallacious, right? And so, or fatuous. And I didn't want to talk about the merits.
I find it kind of ironic, too, that a lot of people don't realize it was the Democrats that fought to keep slavery and the Republicans that.
Yes, ended it was.
Up, you know, yeah. And I don't think a lot of people realize that it's kind of shifted now. And the Democratic Party is, you know, the party that supposedly is, you know, like
cares about racial injustice.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you think about Robert Byrd, right? Robert Byrd in West Virginia. I mean, was it? I mean, and you think about, I mean, Robert Byrd was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, exactly, precisely, and I could be wrong a little bit here. I hope I'm not, but he was. I think he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan at one point, or he was. I might be shooting myself in the foot. Somebody fact check me on that. But I believe Robert Byrd has like ties early on to that movement in West Virginia. So too did, what's his name? Who was the oldest living?
Ben Affleck.
No, the oldest, oldest senator ever. And I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Oh, from West Virginia. No, not him.
I can't think of it. Anyway, but anyway, like there's a, people like to try to hide that or forget about it. We also like to pretend that, like, oh, did, like, George Washington is a deity, you know, like paintings of him have like halos above his head. And yet he owned slavery. He owned people.
Yes.
He had slaves.
Yes.
You know? So anyway,
I guess it's not teaching those things as an asterisk. But again, let's sort of take the merits of critical race theory and put it aside for today and just talk about whether or not litigating against already broke school systems is the right way to solve this problem. I'll leave that for you. And now I will move on to what's trending, unless you have anything else.
I just want to try. Oh, Strom Thurmond. Thank you.
Okay.
Robert Byrd, Ku Klux Klan. I don't even know how to spell it. I should just look at my membership card.
Okay. I was joking.
Stop.
Stupid.
Come on.
Wasn't it Ben Affleck that did one of those celebrity hero things and it found out that his ancestors were...
How do you type Ku Klux? I literally don't even know how to type.
I think it's that Ku Klux Klan.
Okay. Sorry. All K's. Okay.
Not Cuckoo Clan.
Cuckoo Clan? Oh, all right. I can't figure this out.
Don't Google that anymore. I'm afraid of what happens when that's in your search history.
Well, we're demonetized today, I guess.
Yes, he started his life as an exalted Cyclops in the Ku Klux Klan. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Can you clear your cookies after that? You don't know what are we going to get advertised based on that?
Okay. Yeah. Can you imagine? I'll be on Facebook later today and I'm like, they're like, would you like to join this white supremacist group? Would you like, hey, the Proud Boys are advertising. Would you like to join? My God.
Okay. No, thank you to all of that. I'm going to tell you what's trending on the internet now, folks, for the last day or so, online, Google, Twitter, and the likes. Survivor is trending because the show crowned the winner of season 41. Did you know that it was still in season 41?
No.
Apparently. So I went looking for what's been going on for Survivor in the last 41 seasons? And even if you go to CBS website, zoom in on that and to see who was the winner. So the winner of season 41 was last night. But look at their winners page has not even been updated since 2013 because they can't keep up with their own show. This is live. This is what season is that? Season 35. They don't even have winners on their own website from seasons 36 on because it's so they're just we're just keep going.
Because don't they have, how was 41? I remember when I worked at Fox in Los Angeles, Good Day LA, and we had on remember the naked guy? What was his
name? Richard.
Richard Hatch or whatever he won.
Yeah.
That year, I remember we had him come in and we were joking we wonder if he's going to wear clothes.
Yes,
you remember that?
Yes.
I think that was season.
I think he was
two,
season one. I don't know.
But I'm 44. And when I was in Los Angeles, I was 21 years old.
So how they must have two seasons a year.
Do they have two a year? So they've doubled up on this? Is that how it goes?
I suppose. But they're even over themselves. They cannot even update their own winners list. So anyway, I'm not going to spoil it for you. If you like watching 41 seasons of Survivor, I went to watch the ceremony for the tribunal that voted for the winner. And then I got 2 minutes in and I was like, no, I don't care. I closed it down. So if you do, you'll have to look it up yourself.
Hey, want to do a Survivor season marathon?
No, I don't.
We'll start at season one.
No, thanks.
And I'll be 98 years old by the time it's over.
Nope.
So I had a friend who was a cameraman for that show.
Oh, yeah.
And he would tell me stories of how was always an ambulance right there. And they have, they'd give him clothes and stuff and take care of him after the cameras were off. And it's all fake.
I would just need a chapstick. I can't stand watching those people with super chapped lips. that is let's get uncomfortable. That's the something I'm not willing to get uncomfortable with in this show, you guys, is no chapstick.
No chapstick. And this is weird with a beard because my beard's growing in now. I feel it's getting close where I need to get that chapstick.
We always have chapstick strategically hidden around the house.
Yeah, they're placed in all different places.
It's not specifically chapstick, but some kind of lip balm. Okay, Keychant Sewell is trending because she will become the first female police commissioner in New York City. That's her. Hashtag Selling Tampa is trending. This is a new Netflix show about an all-black, all-female real estate company. The buzz is that it's binge-worthy because these ladies are closing deals in heels. I did watch the trailer. It does look quite fabulous. It's not only that these ladies are all beautiful and very stylish, but also because you get to see these seaside properties that they sell in the Tampa area. They're just beautiful bayside homes with views of the ocean, and it's great.
Brady's bought one from them.
Perhaps. I'm not sure exactly which one is the broker, but she specifically has said, she'll only hire these really fancy ladies, and they are fancy. There's not a flat in sight. Don't you even show up wearing flats.
Flats.
Only heels.
Kate T says no plus size women. What does that mean?
That there's no plus size women in this? Well, I'm not going to opine on that. One of them is pregnant. She's not plus size, though.
Are you sure?
Yes, I can say that. Come on.
Okay.
I know a sister mother when I see her. I don't know.
And I would say those are probably mostly plus size women.
I mean, these are just just average women. What is plus? I mean...
You know what? You guys do not talk about
I guess women's we should stop bodies.
I'm going to stop you right there.
David, okay. We should just stop. Just.
Yeah. Okay. Jorts is trending because the internet is losing its mind about this kitty cat named Jorts. It started with a Reddit thread, and there is a link to the thread in the newsletter. Make sure you're subscribed to morninginvest.com. So the Reddit user said that the colleague accused them of perpetrating ethnic stereotypes because this colleague said that the orange cat, the orange office cat, was dumb. The office, the coworker started crying, insisting that the user take racial sensitivity training because you can't, because it's racist to call an orange cat dumb. Specifically, they said this cat cannot even go through an open door. Like, even if you leave the door open, it still gets confused on how to get in. And at least twice a week, the cat gets trapped. And then Traps Jeans is the black and white cat. Gets trapped because Jorts is too dumb to open the door. And when he called, I think the author is a he, I'm not sure. When the person said Jorts is really dumb, the coworker, who is pseudonymed Pam, burst into tears, went home and said, "You need to take racial sensitivity training because it's super racist to call a cat dumb." So now Jort's Twitter account has over 21,000 followers, and they had to, and there was an update to the post where they went to HR, and she had, for some reason, Pam had been putting butter on Jorts to help Jorts get through the door. And that was also
what the hell?
Doing something bad to Jeans. This is real. You guys, I went down the Jorts
rabbit hole
this morning.
You went down the Jorts cat hole.
And it took me like 45 minutes where I was trying to understand if this was real. And the internet is full of memes about Jorts and race and cats and butter specifically. Don't put. And so, like, you know, the consensus is don't put butter on your. I know I can't stop. Don't put butter on your cat. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And the internet is losing it. Some people are even saying that Jorts should be the person of the year.
Someone made a Procreate artwork of Jorts and butter licking one cat licking another. God, how do people? My God, like there's a tub of butter, and the one cat is licking Jorts.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what is
happening?
So
obviously the one coworker, because she cried for calling Jorts dumb. I guess, you know what? I would cry probably if someone called Grover dumb because he's not. He's really smart. Dog, but like when you have, I don't know, I'm trying to rationalize. I can't.
Grover, what do you think about Jorts?
I don't know.
Grover, do you know Jorts?
Is Jorts racist?
Jorts, I mean, Grover's orange. Is it because Grover's orange that's why they're considering him racist?
I don't know. Racial sensitivity training because the orange one is dumb. Is it like, you're associating it with red hair and people. I'm not quite sure. But I've spent enough time thinking about Jorts.
Grover doesn't even give a rat's behind. He doesn't give a cat. He doesn't even give a cat's behind about this.
No.
He has pretty much the same expression I have right now about it.
Which is what? Which is like, what is this?
Which is, yeah, just like, is this real? This is real.
Yeah, this is the internet.
Real.
This is where we are.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly, I mean, you know.
And so his, what is it? M-I-T-A? Wait, what is it? Am I the a-hole? Am I an a-hole? Am I...
I think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
That's sort of the under the hashtag, am I an a-hole for...
You're asking me?
This is what he's saying. He or she, poster of Jorts. Just look up Jorts, guys, on Twitter, and you will have... that will give you plenty of information.
Oh my God.
For the whole, yeah. I mean, I kind of, you know, is it Garfield related? Is it racist to say Garfield's dumb? Is it?
Garfield is not dumb. Garfield's brilliant.
Very keen.
Odie is dumb, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In
you shouldn't say that. That's.
Yet. Is anything else trending, or is Jorts the last story?
Jorts, I'm going out on Jorts. Jorts is a big deal.
Way
I mean, look at what people are saying now. Like, Jorts
have a
for person of the year.
About, I do have to defend our Clayton and my statement about plus size. I thought plus size was anything over like what models on magazines look like. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like I thought in any magazine. No, I know, but I'm saying, like that's kind of what they make you like. If there's a model that doesn't
look like Kate
like
Moss,
the models that are. Yeah, the models that aren't skinny and in those magazines, they say these are plus size models. If they're any amount bigger than that, you know what I mean?
Can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah.
I had a high school girlfriend I, you know, when you're in high school, you don't know what to buy a girl for like Christmas present, you know? So I went to the mall and I was like, oh, I don't know what to get her. And I got her like some perfume and I went to a store, which I don't know if you know this store or not. It was on the East Coast, but I went to the mall and I went to shopping at this clothing store. It was called Ladybug Plus. And I had no idea that it was a plus size woman's store. And I bought her a plus size sweater.
Yeah.
Small, like she was small. I bought her a plus size sweater and gave it to her and she liked it. And she looked at the tag. She said, oh, this is a plus size store. And she was not a plus size wearer, but the sweater fit.
Yeah.
And I didn't take it back.
And did you get in trouble for it?
I mean, I'm, you know.
She wasn't happy about it.
Not still with her.
Yeah. So that was... That was why. Okay.
I just am basically saying I don't agree. I don't like the term. I don't agree with the term.
Okay.
I just think
all
there
right.
should be models.
I don't either. There you go.
Like that's one reason. You know what? There's a reason that I bought MeUndies when I saw the MeUndies advertisement and they were using regular size people. They weren't trying to use chiseled models. They used regular size people. And I appreciated that because I want to see how things look on people. I don't care about their size. But it's like we have this thing in magazines and stuff where they glorify this you know model look and I don't agree with it.
Okay, so the commenter here on our YouTube channel said there's no plus size ladies, and David said they all look plus size because they look normal bodied, right? They all look like they're pretty healthy ladies. No
In
one is
to what the
twiggy
consider.
Looking,
yeah.
Right? You want to pull up the picture again? Like they all look to me fairly fit. And I would not say by fashion terms that any of them are plus size, but they all are normal bodied. And
Jamaka in our chat, I hope I'm saying your name right, says 12W by 44W is considered plus size. What is that? What is 12W? I don't even know what that means.
I'm not sure what the W means. Is that for men or women? Maybe waist? No. But you're right. Plus sized is a strange, as if there's any kind of like normal body and then you are outside of it. It is a strange nomenclature. I don't like it either.
Yeah.
But by normal fashion standards, no, these ladies are not
right there, right? But like Vogue magazine would be like, this is a plus size catalog. Like, no, that's what I want to see right there.
Yeah.
Like you look at girls from the 20s and 30s and stuff like that. Like they just were, you know, healthy people.
I want to know this dress on the far left. How do you sit and walk in that, girl?
Yeah, I want to know that too.
That is, I mean, okay. Yeah. You know?
Catch a stiff breeze and, you know, it's all over for you.
Yeah.
She's also wearing a cape, which is cool too. So she probably is a superhero.
She can keep that.
Yeah.
Maybe she's got a cod piece under there and then it's okay.
Cod piece. All right. We're going to get to your super chats here as we wrap things up. But I want to tell you really quickly how you can get up to $3,500 in stock right now by going to our friends over at Moomoo. If you go to morninginvest.com/Moomoo, yes, it's a great trading platform that allows you to trade stocks and crypto. And I love their interface. They also give you a bunch of free stuff that you don't get on other stock trading platforms, like level 2 quotes, so you can track stocks and crypto. But they're giving away 5 free stocks up to $3,500 right now in free stocks. If you go to morninginvest.com/moomoo, MOOMOO, all one word, morninginvest.com. You have to use that link to get the free stocks. But they're also giving away for Christmas. It started today. Today is December 16th. Their new Christmas promotion started today where they're giving away a chance to win an iPhone 13, an Oculus Quest 2. They're giving 85 of these away. They're giving 17 iPhone 13s away. And they're also giving away a whole bunch of other gifts as well. It's free to start because you're going to get free stock and you can start trading immediately. Again, their download is fantastic. Their apps are great. This is the platform that I'm now using. I just love how easy and their whole interface is for heavier stock trading and crypto investing. So to get those free stocks, go to morninginvest.com/moomoo for the up to $3,500 in free stock. Well,
all right. Well, I want to wish my mom again a happy birthday and wish my little girl good luck at her concert tonight. And we'll see you here tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone, have a great afternoon, everyone. Grover says goodbye. Goodbye, pizza. Goodbye, David. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Peace.